It's time for your weekly dose of Wayne's Comics.
Welcome to episode 686 of the Wayne's Comics Podcast. Thanks so much for listening. Tom Marvelli from The Boy in the Bot returns this week, and he's talking about his upcoming Kickstarter for the second installment in this great comics franchise. It's always a pleasure to talk comics with creator Tom Marvelli, who is signing supporters up for the crowdfunder for his second chapter of this excellent comic series coming soon to Kickstarter. Here's the description. The Boy in the Bot Book 2 is the next chapter in Tom Marvelli's thrilling sci-fi trilogy. A boy and his robot flee evil forces determined to reclaim what's theirs. We discuss the latest news about this great comic, check out who the characters are, and find out what else Tom is up to and has coming our way soon. Be sure to follow this great project today so you can keep up with the latest information about this groundbreaking comic. I'm sure you're going to enjoy what Tom has to say. There's a lot to get to in this episode, so let's get on with the show. In the wake of a devastating explosion, Gideon is left scarred, but relentless in his pursuit of the robot he believes to be Project Blue. His search leads him to a secluded lake house in Vermont, where young Billy Dawson and his robotic guardian are in hiding, forming an unlikely bond in the aftermath of tragedy. The Boy in the Bot Book 2, The Hunt for Project Blue, is the next chapter in Tom Marvelli's thrilling sci-fi trilogy. A boy and his robot flee evil forces determined to reclaim what is theirs. And I'm glad to welcome back to the podcast the creator and the scripter for this great book is Tom Marvelli. How you doing, Tom?
Hi, Wayne. Thanks again for having me. I really appreciate it our first time around and really do appreciate you having me on a second time. So thank you very much.
Well, it's good to talk with you. I loved the first book. I got the first book, and boy, you sent all these little nice, great things with it. There was like the packaging was all great. Everything was very colorful and very outstanding, and I really loved it. And I'm so looking forward to issue two. And I have to say, I appreciate you gave me a chance to see a little bit of a prequel for the second book, which I enjoyed. Which gives me a couple of things I want to comment on right off the bat. I know Rafael Herrero was the artist on the first book.
That's correct.
And I'm a big fan of his, and I understand he's gone off to do Dazzler for Marvel and good things like that.
Correct.
But yes. I thought you did a great job. Leonardo Rodriguez is the artist in the second book, and it really, I thought the art styles and stuff like that really, really comes together really nicely. I had to go back and say, wait a minute, who did do this artwork? Because it's very nicely done. I mean, you must have done a bit of a searching process to find Leonardo.
Yeah, what was great was, like, you know, when I had spoke to, you know, Raphael, you know, when we were in the middle of actually about two-thirds of the way through the Boy in a Bot book one, he had come to me saying, hey, Marvel had approached him to want to do the Marvel Dazzler book. And I told him, go, you know, I mean, that's a great opportunity. He'd be silly not to take it. And, you know, him and I worked together to find, you know, basically his replacement ultimately for the series. And he was the one who actually had recommended Leo. He said, I have a friend who's in the industry. He's worked at DC Comics and others who, you know, is tremendous at doing what, you know, the storytelling and all that stuff. Cause that's really the biggest thing for me is can someone do the emotional, you know, the impactful stuff, not just the big action, but the quiet moments really well. And so he got me in contact with Leo. And what happened was, again, knowing that he was going to be leaving the book, I had Leo take over what was essentially the last few pages that we had to finish on the back end of book one, so that Leo was already on some of those pages that would then bring it seamlessly, knowing full well that he was going to be taking over, you know, book two and beyond. So, and it's been really great working with Leo. He's been a fantastic artist and he really captures the characters, you know, obviously sad to see Raphael go, you know, obviously, you know, tremendous talent, and he's still with me, you know, we still stay in contact and catch up on stuff. And, you know, without spoiling too much, he will be back on doing a little something for me for book three, but we'll talk about that another time. Right now, yeah, Leo has taken the reins and he's been doing a really terrific job with it. And of course we still have Ren Spiller on colors. That really does help keep that continuity, the visual continuity as well. And Ren's just doing, again, tremendous job and just bringing the whole book to life. So really pleased with the team and what we're able to do together, you know. So
because these days, you know, it's so hard to keep an art team on a book.
Absolutely.
Real life comes along, gets in the way sometimes, or other opportunities present themselves, and you've got to keep going. But I literally thought it really continued over from the first book tremendously. And I have read some books where the art style just radically changes and it startles me. And I'm like,
right.
And this one does not do that. I literally flowed right on from the first book into the second. And I thought that was a very, very great way, the way that you did that and pulled that together.
Well, thank you. Yeah, like I said, it was definitely with the help of Raphael and obviously with Leo, of course, just really just digging in and making it look as great as he has. So
it's just terrific. I really like it. The one thing I have to say, and of course, I haven't seen the whole of the second issue. Sure. How are you ever going to wrap this up? This is a trilogy.
Yes.
How in the world? You've got so much going on. I've been sitting there figuring, how are you possibly going to wrap this up in the third book?
Yes.
I can't figure it out.
Oh, thank you. Yeah. And one of the things that, obviously, before I started the entire project, I had everything written and outlined with all the major beats. So to make sure that everything, you know, sort of like the A, you know, not to get all too sort of under the hood, but like, you know, the A plot, the B plot, the C plot start to merge together for the climax and all that stuff. And really just sort of mapping all of that out to make sure that nothing gets left behind, that everyone's, you know, character arc, if you will, you know, have some conclusion to it, of course, you know. So we've mapped it out pretty well. We know where we're headed with book three, and book two really is sort of the, you know, obviously, you know, it's the setting the stage for what will be for book three, as many, you know, second acts of, you know, in books and features and so on typically do. And that's one of the things that we wanted to make sure that, you know, for book two, we were really starting to amplify the threat levels with these characters to show the urgency and the immediacy of why the bad guys are doing what the bad guys are doing, what pressures they're under to achieve what they're looking to do. Because again, for me, it's like, I'm never interested in those sort of twirling the mustache villains. I like my villains to be, have a lot more complexity than that, to be more in shades of gray versus black and white. And we see a little bit of that in book two. You know, obviously the CEO, you know, Strom, he's sort of the guy behind a lot of this stuff, but you start to understand why he's doing what he's doing, what pressure he's under to achieve the things that he needs to do. And obviously the villainous part is the actions he takes to make that happen. Obviously go far, you know, far from where it should ever go. And, you know, so while we're amplifying that storyline, we're taking a beat for, you know, obviously without giving away too much of book one, you know, we established the initial meeting of the boy and the robot, and we really wanted to take this book to give them time for that, their relationship to breathe and build. So that by the time we get to like a book three, we've already now have this bond between them, but we have to kind of earn that in book two, which is what this book is all about. It really is the heart of our story. And the relationship that these two characters start to forge together, and, you know, how the boy sort of works with the bot to kind of bring a little bit of humanity to him, to understand human nature a little bit. And the bot is really there almost like as a symbol of confidence and, you know, protection and all that stuff. So he starts to, you know, they start to need each other in very interesting ways. And it, you know, sort of two parts make a whole, if you will. And it's great to see how their dynamic starts to evolve, you know, together. And again, and to your point, I had to do it like, really in these two chapters. You know, it's not like a film where you get like a montage, you know, like that shows a span of time, you know, where these relationships are building over a span of time. I really wanted to get to their relationship and earn those moments.
There's a quote at the very beginning of the second book. It's a C.S. Lewis quote. And I always enjoy C.S. Lewis. And the quote is, "No one ever told me that grief felt so much like fear."
Yes.
I love that quote.
Because I thought that really kind of struck to the heart of a lot of what the boy is going through, obviously with the things that have, you know, occurred in book one, and the loss he feels and the shock of those losses in a very quick way in his life. You know, he is only a 12-year-old boy. So what does that, you know, feel like, look like, and how does he respond to those things? And, you know, so that's where that sort of fear comes in, is really because the grief of losing, you know, people that he cares about, you know, and how that basically manifests itself into the fear that he, you know, we see him go through in book two, and how the bot ultimately tries to help him to overcome those fears.
I have to say, when you read the book, and I think this is true of the first book because there's a second, pay attention to the dialogue.
Yes.
Particularly between the Billy and the bot.
Yes.
There are things going on that when they talk to each other, because normally sometimes kids are, they're not exploring subjects to the, but Billy does a lot of that. And yes. I have to say, as I was telling you before we started recording, there was some stuff in there that I had to actually stop and say, wait a second, that means something. That's really important stuff. So yes. It's really good to see. I there's so much I want to know. I'm just, you know, it's like you're slowly peeling back the onion so we can find out what's inside. Yes. And gosh, it's great. I read the description that's on the Kickstarter. Oh, which reminds me, we should talk about the fact that the Kickstarter is going on. Tell people about the Kickstarter, if you would, but and also Indiegogo, I understand.
Sure, absolutely. So right now, both the book two, The Hunt for Project Blue, as it's titled, you know, The Boy and the Bot, book two, is currently in pre-launch on both Kickstarter and Indiegogo. And basically, we gave ourselves a pretty long, you know, decent runway to get folks to sign up. And hopefully we'll get a lot of folks to sign up for the book. And if anyone signs up, there is a free exclusive poster for those that pre-launch sign up that will be delivered upon, obviously, the receiving of the books as well. And the book itself will go into final or full launch. The campaign will launch in the beginning of June. I think we're looking at around June 1st or 2nd. It'll be that first week of June. So hopefully, you know, people come on board. What we are going to offer in this campaign is not only book two, but we're also, for those that may have missed book one, we're going to have, because we obviously printed those books, we have stock on those books. So we're going to take and put up a limited quantity of each of the six variants from book one, so people can catch up there. Another thing we're going to do too, for the first time, because again, we were, you know, piloting it the first time with the, you know, this crowdfunding way of working. But we are now also going to offer a digital versions of the books as well. Oh. So especially for those like in, you know, in the international space, like we want to make sure that there's an opportunity for them to have it. So we want to offer up a digital PDF of book one as well. So that'll be made available. Yeah. Cause like what we found was, you know, and that's sort of a challenging area for certain folks, which is they want to buy the book, but the shipping cost to go overseas is astronomical. So how do you kind of meet them halfway, which is really to offer up the digital version of the book.
Mm-hmm. Now, before I forget, because I want to dive into the book so much that I'm going to forget those. We should talk about Webtoons. The fact that The Boy and the Bot, the first book, parts of it are available on Webtoons. Do you want to talk about that?
Sure, absolutely. So what we did was originally when we were starting book one, we put out basically the half chapter of chapter one. So the first half of that went into a free sampler that we were giving out. I know folks were, you know, some of the talent involved in the book, they were doing like signings at cons and so on and selling their signatures. And we sold out in Brazil and New York Toy Fair on those. And so right now, you know, instead of giving out the free sampler, you know, and also right now on our current website, if you sign up, there's a black and white version of the sampler. But we wanted to take it a step further and offer it as for mobile devices. So one of the things besides obviously your iPhone, your iPads, et cetera, was really the best way that we found to do that was through Webtoon. So what we're doing is we're taking that story, the four color, the in color sampler, and we're breaking that down into episodes and offering those on a weekly basis on Webtoon. So you can read the first half of chapter one on Webtoon over the next course of basically the next several weeks leading up to the launch of book two.
Wow. Well, because it's so funny because I've been getting into Webtoon recently, Webtoon stuff. There's a Batman one because I'm a Batman guy. There's a Batman Wayne Family Adventures out there.
Actually, I saw that. Yeah, that was interesting because, like, one of the things that, you know, obviously, you know, because we want to be able to bring a new audience in, new readers in, and it really is a totally different way of reading a comic book, you know, because it is that vertical scrolling where, you know, you're reading, it's almost like the Sunday newspaper strips, but in like a vertical format. And how do you design those pages to make it interesting? So it's not just this sort of stacking of panels on top of each other, but it's visually interesting. And how do you still maintain those story beats and those pauses where you want them to be, you know? Mm-hmm. And how do you get the action to speed up and slow down in that vertical scrolling kind of way of operating, you know, because like you no longer have like that sort of cliffhanger on the end of a page that makes someone turn the page and continue reading. That language is a little different now. You kind of have to do that on the episode level. So mm-hmm. every episode has to kind of end on a little bit of a cliffhanger. So that's just been sort of a literary thing and trying to figure out that format and where best to break the book so that I'm giving out the right amount of content on a weekly basis that'll engage readers and want them obviously to come back the following week for the next iteration or the next episode of it. And as of right now, it's all programmed for a release every Sunday on the East Coast at 12 o'clock noon. So right now, episodes 1 and 2 are available, which equates to, I believe, like the first 2 pages of the actual comic book itself. And like I said, we're going to go through all the way the first half of chapter 1, and hopefully people will engage with it. They'll be interested in it and want to read more. And on every single one of those strips, we do leave where people can then go in and find the full book 1 on Kickstarter and Indiegogo, et cetera. So there is a little bit of call to action at the end of those where people can go buy the book if they're interested to read the full story.
So did you have to program that for that to work like that? Or did they help you with that?
I did that all myself, you know, looking at other ones that have been done, you know, reading about, you know, the specs and stuff online and just kind of digging in, just, you know, kind of leaning into my background of storytelling and doing some of this stuff. I was like, okay, I see how this kind of operates. So, you know, we put in the front credits on every one of the, you know, on every single strip. You know, some folks do that, some don't. And then the middle content is really the episodic portion of it. And then we end every single one of them with sort of like that, you know, collect all 6 covers, like that kind of stuff. So people know what's available to them should they want to, you know, go, you know, dig deeper and purchase further.
Because I know several people that are getting on Webtoons. And I'm fascinated by that because, you know, digital stuff always puzzled me for the longest time because Comixology was big for a while. And the rumor was that Comixology was going to replace the paper version.
Right, right.
But now Comixology has basically been folded into Amazon and it's
right.
It's not nearly the easy to use app that it once was. And so I really only use that stuff if I've missed a paper copy and I need to keep up with the story, then I'll buy the digital version through Amazon. But boy, it's hard to find stuff on there, I have to tell you.
I know, absolutely. And that's why, you know, with this being, you know, obviously we did our debut book and this is our second book out the gate. And, you know, I am looking at and exploring like other avenues, other platforms, where can we get the story into the most readers' hands? And Webtoon was obviously one of those. And, you know, we're still looking at others and other platforms where we can put it as well. Just again, just so that other folks can, you know, that maybe go to a different platform than a Webtoon or something else can still engage with the material. And like I said, we will have it updated on our website as a pastor. So if you go to our website, it's not there yet, but it's going to come, is that once you go to our website, you can go and you'll be able to click on the Webtoon link there and it'll take you right to our page where the episodes will be hosted. So it's another way to kind of reach it because, you know, some people know Webtoon, some don't. And some people want the physical copy. Some people don't. They like the digital. That's why, again, you know, for book 2, taking in some of that feedback, we are going to offer, like I said, that the PDF on book 2 so that folks can engage with that and book 1 as well. So that'll be available.
See, unfortunately, I've been buying books for so long that I can't read fast enough to get through all the paper copies I've got.
Right.
So I've literally got a stack of books as tall as I am that I've got to get through. So right. I have taken on certain circumstances, not this one. I want the paper of this one. But I have taken to getting digital versions as well. Yes. because it's if I'm bored and I'm on my phone and I've got some time, I can dive into a book and get a book read. But you know, I can't carry books around with me as nice as I'd like to.
Of course, yeah, that's why iPads are friendly for that. Right, you can load them up and. Mm-hmm. And you could put, you know, hundreds of books on an iPad and you could kind of immerse yourself for quite a while in that space, you know.
There was a game I used to play. If I was sitting somewhere and I had 15 minutes, I had to wait. There was a Justice League action game that I used to play. And it took 15 minutes to get through a level. And I said, okay, 15 minutes, I'll play this game and then I'll be ready to go on with the other thing. I've also come to the fact that I've played that game a long time, and now I'm ready for other things to read. So I'm doing that. So this, I have to say that I'm just, I'm touched by Billy's reactions to things. He is in a horrible situation for a child that age to go through.
Yes.
And the things that he's constantly dragged into stuff. You know, my brother used to use the phrase kicking and screaming, but he doesn't do that. But he's always like he ends up, I don't want to spoil too much, but let's just say the robot has a very unique way of making sure that Billy is safe.
Yes.
And so the thing that, well, let's just say when that part is over, Billy is not all that happy about it.
Right. Absolutely. And that's one of the things I wanted to get across with the characters that, from the first moment we meet him to where we are, obviously in book two, is he's never truly fully in control of his own devices in that way or his own circumstances. He's always in reaction to things that are going on around him. And not quite, I don't call him like a catcher's mitt, if you will, but he's definitely taking on a lot and it's just all shocking and all new to him. And, you know, he's surveying his new reality. And the shock of that obviously hasn't worn off because it just happened to him. Obviously, just, you know, the span of time between book one and two is really only a few hours. Mm-hmm. So it really still is resonating with him. But yeah, I wanted the character to feel like he was not in full control. That's why in book one, again, not spoiling too much, but, you know, there's the scene where he's like being bullied a couple of times. We see that, you know, so, you know, he's this introverted kid who's constantly taking things. And he's never really stood up for himself. He's never stood up for his circumstance. He's always kind of been a pushover, if you will. And so we, you know, in this, you know, for book two, again, without giving too much away, is like I wanted him to still be in that sort of reactionary place, that more reactive than proactive. Mm-hmm. And obviously he's learning from the robot as well, his bot friend protector, you know, a little bit more about himself and, you know, where he came from. And again, this doesn't spoil much, but, you know, we talked about this last time, is that Billy never knew his mom. She died when she gave birth to him. And, you know, the bot obviously had been around quite a little bit longer than Billy had been alive. Mm-hmm. So he starts to learn who his mom was, the family dynamic a little bit more through the eyes of the robot. And it sort of helps to paint a picture of this life that he never had, you know, and they start to, again, they start to build this bond, this relationship. And like I said earlier, like this is the heart of the story where, you know, these two characters, hopefully the reader will walk away caring about these two characters and their relationship and their safety ultimately.
Well, he's a kid. Is the thing that I'm struck with is that here he is flung into this fantastical circumstance, and he's dealing with it like a kid would. What are you doing? You know, why are you doing this to me kind of stuff? And I feel for him because, you know, I have to say, even I as an adult, if I was flung into that same circumstance, I don't think I'd handle it as well as he does. Right.
Yeah. And that's one thing I want to convey too. Like, you know, because he just met, you know, the bot towards the end of book one, is he still doesn't know who to trust. You know, he's been through a lot in book one, you know, one thing after the next, you know, and the hits keep coming and he just doesn't know where the next one's coming from and who he can trust. And part of this sort of journey that he goes through in book two is to let his guard down a little bit to be able to trust this new friend of his, if you will, and to build that relationship. But yeah, it's like his guard is way up because of all the things that have just happened to him. And he's in this new world that he finds himself in now because of the circumstances of what happened in book one. And, you know, for the first time in his life, he is truly alone or perceives to be alone. And he's really got to rely on this new stranger who happens to know his whole family, mm-hmm. and building that relationship and that dynamic between the two of them.
Mm-hmm. It's really a gripping story. It's done very well. I like I said, I feel for Billy and what he's going through. And I can relate. You know, if I was in that circumstance, what would I do? You know? But one of the things I wanted to mention is you're introducing a couple of new characters in the yes. second book.
Yes.
And they're mentioned if you go to the Kickstarter page, which, by the way, let me see. If you're going to go to that page, you go to Kickstarter.com. If you go, I think, A Boy in the Bot Book 2, I think they'll probably yes. get you to the place you need to go.
Yes,
and there's a little bit of a description. There's a great music video, by the way, as well.
Thank you.
That is terrific stuff. And then we, in the middle of the second paragraph, it says Detective, and I don't know how Todd pronounced his name, Jennifer mm-hmm. Darme?
Jennifer Darme and her partner Charlie Dubois. Those are the two detectives.
Yep. Chasing the truth, uncover evidence of a violent conspiracy while a shadowy assassin works to silence it. So in other words, they're in danger well. So, oh my goodness, danger closing in from all sides. I thought that's a really good way to describe it. Billy and his robotic protector must fight for survival and for what it truly means to be human. That's interesting.
Yes.
That's very, very sci-fi. That is the basic premise of science fiction. What is it to be human?
Yeah.
So that's a great concept. So this screams animated series to me. It just does. Yeah.
Fingers crossed one day, right?
Oh, gosh. It's just, you know, a lot of the art does that to me, too. There's a lot of movement in the art.
Yes.
You know, things swish around and move around. And, you know, a lot of art is very – certain artists are very – that moment. But some artists are able to fill in the gaps between one panel and the other. And that's what your guys do is just – I feel like I'm watching a movie reading the book the way it's done so nice.
Yeah, credit. That's all credit to Leo and obviously even Ren for the colors and bringing that all to life, you know. And one of the things that I really like what Leo has done because, again – having drawn robots before and anyone who's ever drawn robots before knows like you're really working with some basic geometry in a lot of ways and you know, circles, squares, rectangles that all work as a robot, you know, that build out to a robot, but those lines can become very boring very quickly, you know? And so it takes a special kind of talent to take the geometry of a robot and make it visually interesting and bend and twist and do things that maybe not quite the normal way, but it's a little bit more in that fantasy space, but it, you know, and some of the edges being a little bit rougher, you know, not everything ruled out exactly. And that's really where the energy of the material comes from. It's really just honoring the geometry without being beholden to it.
Mm-hmm. Now there's a video on the Kickstarter page. I haven't looked at the Indiegogo. Is it also on the Indiegogo page, this making of The Boy and the Bot?
It is. Yes.
Okay, good. It's a really great the up top video really got me. I haven't had a chance to watch that one. I'm going to watch that one as soon as we get done. Yes. But there's also a bunch of covers, and one of the ones I love the most is the second one. It's done by Tony Washington.
Yes,
it shows. There's the two of them are fishing, the boy and the bot.
Yes.
And what's hilarious to me is the bot is there and he turns around and looks at us when he cuts this little bitty fish out of the thing. And the boy has got a fish as big as he is that he pulls out. So the contrast between the two of them is wonderful. It has a great, so smartly done. Did you come up with the concept of that? Did the artist?
I did. Yeah. Cause like what I wanted to, and you'll see this throughout, you know, book two, is I wanted to create these moments of very human, you know, relatable human activities, right? So, So we'll see the boy and the bot doing various activities together, like typical siblings would, you know, in that kind of relationship, the older brother, sort of younger brother dynamic, if you will, you know? And what I wanted to do is like, again, this was part of that where the bot is learning to be human. And there's a scene in book two that's played for a little bit of levity where the bot is trying, and it's the opening of what is technically chapter four, but chapter two in this book, overall in the overall story, it's chapter four, but this one's chapter two. And the boy goes looking for the bot, and he sees the bot is actually out fishing, but he's doing it completely wrong, right? And he's doing it from the perspective of how a bot would, you know, make it more efficient, right? It's more mechanical. It's more, you know, like, what's the logic of this? And what's the most, you know, the easiest way to go about doing this? And the boy, and again, in teaching the bot to, you know, to be a little bit more human, is like, no, that's not how you fish. This is how you fish. And he has a line in there where he's basically saying, like, you know, Dad always said, like, you know, the key to fishing isn't about catching catching the biggest catch. It's about the time you spend with the person that you're fishing with. Mm. Like, that's what fishing's really about, right? Mm. And wow. You know, so the boy kind of bestows that information onto the bot and gives that to him. And then, so I, you know, I created this one scene, and I really wanted to kind of pull that scene out and make that a cover, because I felt like that was sort of a turning point where the student becomes the teacher a little bit, mm-hmm, in their dynamic. Mm-hmm. And the reason why you see that scene, and that's why I just love the scene a lot, which is the levity of it, which is because it happens as a scene in the book as well. The bot pulls up a fish, and it is a small little, it's a little fish, right? And and meanwhile, he's already caught other fish his own way. So he's finding this a little bit ridiculous, like we're just wasting time and we're not catching anything kind of thing. And so he catches the little fish, and right immediately thereafter, the boy catches this big fish. And like a typical older brother would to a younger brother who does something better than the older brother, who bests him at something, is almost this level of human, not jealousy or envy, but it was just like, he gets a little bit like, not ticked off, but almost like he's a little jealous, I guess, a lack of better words. And, you know, and he's just like, he's upset that, like, wait a minute, like, this guy, he just caught this thing and I got this little thing. You know, he realizes like the dynamic has shifted. You know, and almost like in an older brother wanting to take the kickball and go home, he turns back away from looking at the boy and from catching the fish. He's like, oh, it's starting to get dark. We got to go. You know, like he's almost like a little upset that his brother or, you know, his quote unquote brother figure here did something better than him. You know,
well, I love that he turns and looks at us.
Yes.
That is so Warner Brothers animation kind of a thing. Yeah. I got a kick out of that.
Yeah. And like I said, I had mentioned that scene to Tony, and Tony, you know, who I've known for many years in our days, you know, working at Marvel, you know, I had brought him in to work on a few projects for me back in the day while I was there. And so when I started up, you know, doing book two, you know, Tony and I got back into contact with each other for, you know, after a few years, and it was like, we had never missed a beat, and we started talking, catching up. And, you know, Tony, to his credit, he was like, hey, you know, he would love to be a part of this, and was, you know, wanted to do a cover, you know, and it was great to work with him again. And yeah, I sent him, you know, that write up, like I had just mentioned to you, like kind of gave him the story, went through the story with him. And I said, can you capture this scene on a cover for me? Because I think this scene, like I said, it's the heart of the story. And it's really the moment where some of their relationship kind of flips a little bit. And so I thought he did a great job. He nailed it. And, you know, we actually put out a video of his making of that cover. And that's on my on anotherdoorcomics.com right now. And we pushed that onto my socials as well. So huge shout out to Tony and putting that, you know, helping to put that video together for me of him just kind of going through his process and building of that cover.
I would be remiss if I didn't mention your cover.
Oh, thanks.
It's cover C, because I had this thing. I always believe that you've got to put faces, like the robot's face looking at us and stuff like that. But your cover doesn't do that. Yes. And it's still very touching, because I'll tell you why this bothered. Somebody had done a patient's manual at a hospital, and everything were hands holding different things.
Right.
And it came across as really cold to me, because I always thought with our hands holding a glass, hands holding food, hands holding this. And so I didn't really get any relation to this. But the way that you've done this one, and what the picture shows is his hand is holding one of the fingers of the bot. But it's done in such a beautiful way that I it's a very tender moment for that.
Thanks. Yeah, because like one of the things, you know, for this book, you know, just like, you know, we did like the six variant covers for book one. For book two, we put more focus on just doing three out of the gate for this. So we have cover A, which is done by Daniel Maya. And he's done some great work, you know, in the industry as well. And so he came on and did a cover for me. He also did a little, but he did the prologue in The Boy in the Bot book one. So I brought him over to help do this cover. And I'm working on another project, which we'll talk about another time with him as well currently. And so he did the cover A for me because I really wanted to capture that sort of cinematic look, like that big epic storytelling like we did for book one with Raphael's cover. Mm-hmm. So this is a really good sort of companion piece to that. So I felt like I had the action storytelling portion of this well covered with Daniel's book, you know, cover. And I knew, you know, Tony was doing an excellent job in capturing that sort of heartwarming moment. Cause like I said earlier, like this is the heart of our story, you know, is book two. And so I really, for my cover, you know, instead of having the boy and the bot sort of standing next to each other, like I did for book one, I really wanted to get into that relationship a little bit because I wanted to zero in on like where the trust is, like to your point, like earlier, like, it's like, this is where the trust is starting to develop, where like his barriers or his guard is coming down. He's allowing somebody in to his world a little bit. And that's why I wanted him kind of reaching out, and he's, you know, he's holding, you know, obviously he's a giant robot. He's an 8-foot robot to like a 12-year-old boy. So I wanted him just kind of holding onto his pinky a little bit. You know, it's not like a full mm-hmm. grip, but he's kind of holding on mm-hmm. because, again, there's a little bit of trepidation there, but it's a little bit of trust building. And mm-hmm. that's really what I wanted to capture in that single shot. And I felt just two hands together, really, you know, overlooking sort of like the cameras behind them, overlooking the lake where they are. Mm-hmm. I felt like that was a great way to kind of cover that moment. You know, mm-hmm. so like Tony's gets a little bit of humor. We have the action, and this one, I wanted to make sure that we a little bit of the tenderness, if you will, like you said earlier. I think that I wanted to capture a little bit of that in this.
Really is touching because, you know, normally I'm not for hands, but this one really gets me.
Oh, thank
you. I really like that. So really good stuff. So let's see. As far as you're in the middle of the second book. How far are you in the second book right now?
So we finished all of chapter one, of course, and chapter two, we're about halfway through. Like I said, that's why we're at pre-launch, you know, gives us plenty of time to wrap up book two. The book will be 100% completed before the actual launch of the book. So soon as we have the orders in, we'll start, you know, we'll send it to the printer and we'll be off to the races. So just like for book one, there'll be very little lag time between when the funding finishes and when the book's shipped to you know, the backers. So yeah, we're really on the back end right now of what is chapter two of this book / chapter three, chapter four of the entire series. Wow. So yeah, so we're really close to finishing. And, like I said, and then the covers for book three are being illustrated right now. And so we can put those, you know, put one of those in the back of the book just to kind of show what's coming next and, go from there.
How are you going to wrap this up in one more book? I can't figure out how you're going to do it.
Yeah, it's good. Yeah, I've already, like I said, the way that I tend to work as being an illustrator myself is I'll write out the beats. It is very traditional, I guess, for a lot of folks is that, you know, I'll write out the beats, the story beats as I see them, and then I'll just kind of juggle them around if something makes more sense, cut some, add some. And then from there, I'll allocate pages. Like, all right, I have 2 pages for this scene. I've got 1 page for this scene, like just to kind of, and then, you know, where do I want to speed up time, right? So it's like 1 page, you know, we do scene change, like cut 2 scenes, like every other page, if you will, or almost sometimes every page. And just to get that speed. So I'll allocate the pages. And then from there, I'll do thumbnail sketches of the entire book, you know, from top to bottom and put panels and draw them very rough, you know, just to kind of stick figures or something, maybe a little bit beyond stick figures so that Leo obviously can understand what I'm trying to get at for each of those. And then from there, I'll do a little bit more of a detailed panel to panel write up as to what's going on in each panel. So when I send that to him, he's getting a panel by panel description plus my illustrations and any reference materials that I have. Because obviously, you know, we go back to certain offices again from book one and so forth. So I make sure he has all that reference. And then he, you know, goes to town just starting to build out those pages and starts passing them back to me. And then we go from there. So all of book three right now is fully outlined. It's in detail. The first chapter of book three is already thumbnailed out. And I'm waiting to thumbnail out, I guess, my connection to it. It's like I'm almost hesitant to to do the last one. And I mean, it's already outlined, it's already written. It's just like, I feel like if I thumbnail it, then it's done, you know? Mm-hmm. And I like, mm-hmm. so I'm like kind of holding on to the last minute to thumbnail the resolution of the story. Cause you know, chapter five is really the climax of it. And then, you know, chapter six is a little bit more of the climax and the resolution and, right. and the epilogue ultimately.
See, I can relate to that because I was part of a group for a long time that used to do, we were writing a fan film about Star Trek. And I had this idea because there was a ship that had no aliens on it. And for the life of me, I couldn't figure why, how would a Star Trek ship not have any aliens on it? So I came up with this idea and I had this idea rumbling around in my head for like 2 years. Right. And we started writing the script. This one guy I know who has written scripts for television and stuff. We started writing it, and we would get together on Saturday nights and stuff when we were writing it. And I'll never forget when we wrote the last thing, the end, and I felt the strange whoosh, right. like it was leaving. It was no longer in my head. It was down on the paper. Right. And I felt so weird about that, you know, because I thought, gosh, I've been carrying this story around in me for 2 years, and now all of a sudden it's on paper, right. and I don't have to carry it around anymore. So I guess that's kind of similar to what you're talking about.
Absolutely. And like I said, it's already because I had to write it out to make sure that it fit, you know, the format of the amount of pages that we're looking to do and all that. And it all does. And it has a very, you know, clean ending. It's just the, just putting it down in the thumbnails. I feel like once I do that, then it's like, I'm no longer in control of that part of it. And it really is done in my world other than, you know, receiving the pages and reviewing them and doing all the other stuff. But the storytelling part is essentially completed in on my wow. side at that point, you know, and wow. I'm having a hard time letting that one go, even though I'm working on other stuff too, but mm-hmm. it's still like, this was the one that started it all. So I'm a little bit close to it, you know, so.
Yeah, well, you know, I just noticed, I didn't realize it was in that cover A, in the very center of it is that fishing sequence again.
Yes, yes.
I didn't notice that. I was so busy looking at the face, and I said, wait a second, that's them on the, they're on the dock there too. Boy, that's a critical part of the story,
yeah,
obviously.
Absolutely. Yeah, like I said, that to me was the turning point where, like I said, that, you know, where I think their bond starts to really form. And the roles reverse a little bit in the sense, like I said earlier, like, you know, the student becomes the teacher in a little bit of those moments. And because he's teaching, his level of self-confidence, like it almost sort of starts to materialize because he's now in control. He's the one sort of like, you know, he's the one saying, hey, this is how it's done. This is how you're supposed to do it, you know, mm-hmm. versus sort of being on the receiving end of that.
Hmm. So. That's so interesting. You know, I'm going to be real interested when these storylines come together as they must.
Yes.
It's going to be something. It's going to be really interesting to see. It just, you know, see, this is the way I think that a lot of good storytelling is done, is to make you care about the characters.
Yes.
And then we want to see, then we have to know what's going to happen next. What's happening? Yes. And that's the way I feel about this book. It's just, God, I'm so intrigued, and I want to know. There's so much I want to know about the bot. I asked a whole bunch of questions last time. I'm not going to ask them again this time.
Sure.
But I have to tell you, I have theories, as you well know, about what I think is going on. I'm curious to see how close I am to the
truth. Right. Yeah, and like I said, that's why, you know, with taking this, and that's why, you know, we wanted to take a little bit of a pause and spend a little time with these two characters, because again, book one was like all about, you know, the speed through it, right, in terms of like the inciting incident all the way through, and just kind of, you know, moving, everything's marching towards the mini climax of that first book, mm-hmm. and, you know, and we get there, but I wanted to take a beat, exhale a little bit in this book, and allow the relationship to grow for these two characters. And, you know, so that we as readers, as an audience, we care about these characters, you know, so that by the time we get to the third book and the stakes are so much higher that we care about what happens to these characters and we're rooting for them in the end, you know, mm-hmm. and I really want to make sure that I earn that in our, from our readers in this part of the, in this, you know, chapter two of the book. Book two, I should say. And so hopefully, you know, we'll do that and we'll get, like I said, in book three with all the payoffs and all that stuff are coming. And obviously, you know, while we were pausing a little bit or giving time to breathe for these two characters, we are amplifying the other stuff, right? The bad guys, like what happens to Gideon, and his team at the end of book one, and the ramifications of that, you know, and what is he dealing with as one bot, you know, on the good guy side is learning his humanity. There's a group of people who are losing theirs on the other side, right? Mm-hmm. And that's what's happening there in terms of like the bad guys and what their motivations are and what they're willing to do to get to that final outcome, you know, and how much of themselves are they going to lose to get there? You know, again, it's almost like, you know, the white whale of it all, right? And how much are they mm-hmm. willing to descend into compromising themselves, their own humanity to get there?
Wow. Yeah, it's going to be a great conclusion. I'm looking forward to it. I got to you sent me a part and I had drawings towards the end, and I started, I wish I knew better what's going on these pages.
Right.
You know, sometimes you need dialogue and stuff to understand all that. But wow,
yes.
I just was like, wow, I can't wait to really read this book all the way through because it's going to be so much fun.
Yeah.
And that makes me more excited for book three, when that comes up. Boy, that's going to be a lot of fun.
Yeah, and like I said, as soon as we finish book two, like I said, we're on the very last few pages of book two now. And once we finish those, we're moving right into book three. So knock on wood, we'll be promoting and you know, going to pre-launch probably with book three, probably by the end of this year is the goal.
Wow.
So we'll see. Yeah. So we're moving straight through for sure.
I wish other Kickstarter people would take your work ethic to this.
That's just this book. I mean, you know, spoiler alert, I am working on other titles as well that we could talk about those, you know, in more detail at a later date, but they are part of this universe, this larger universe that we're telling those stories as well. So we'll be talking further about those, you know, in the coming months. You know, by the time we get to book three, we'll be sharing more about what comes after book three, you know.
Okay. So is this all under another door?
Yes.
It is. Okay. So if people want to follow you on social media, how do they do that?
Sure. Absolutely. So you can find me obviously on Instagram. I have two accounts. There's, you know, there's Tom Marvelli, and there's also Another Door Comics on Instagram. You can find me there. You can also find me on my regular website, anotherdoorcomics.com. We also have, I just started a Substack that you can find me there. Also on Another Door Comics, you can find me on that. We just posted our first newsletter this past Sunday, and our plan is to continue forward. We'll have another newsletter coming this coming Sunday, and then we'll go from there. You know, when we have more news to share, we'll continue to put out new newsletters. Where we'll be sharing behind the scenes material on book two, video clips, making of material, sort of all that under the hood stuff that people really like to see as we get to the finish line on finalizing book two and even beyond that. So we'll start to really open up the pull back the curtain a little bit and start sharing a lot more. Other places that you could really find me would be obviously, you know, you could sign up for the Kickstarter, the Indiegogo, the Webtoon. If anyone is interested, we do have also, you know, we did t-shirts and we did other apparel on Threadless as well. So if people are interested in getting this character on as far as like on a t-shirt or what have you, you could find me on Threadless under Another Door Comics as well.
Well, I'm sure this is keeping you real busy, but I'm noticing that a lot of conventions and stuff and stores are doing a lot more events. Are you doing any of that kind of thing, or are you busy enough just getting the project done?
Yeah, right now it's about getting more of the story to readers and getting more of a online presence to people to be aware that, you know, Another Door Comics exists. We're here. We're building these really great stories and really just wanting to build that readership, that fan base. And once we start to feel, you know, good about where we are in our numbers in terms of readers, and then, yes, the plan is to start, you know, once we have enough books, you know, to kind of do the roadshow, if you will, you know, do some of those conventions. Mm-hmm. My goal right now would probably be to start doing conventions in 26, you know, just getting another couple of books under our belt. And then really just take them on the road and see where it goes. But yeah, really it's about right now building that social presence, building the understanding that Another Door Comics is here. We have a publishing plan. We have, like I said, we're on our second book. We have other titles coming as well. And as long as people continue to want to read them, we'll continue to make them. So.
Well, that's great stuff. I have to endorse it. It's great reading. The first book really got me. And the second one, what I've read of the second one's got me hooked too. So I'm dying to see how this all resolves. I can't imagine how this is all going to.
Yes.
Like I said, that third book is going to be something to see how this all wraps up. I'm going to be really fascinated by it because it's just there's all these different moving parts going, and I'm just dying to see how it all comes together. It's great stuff. Again, it's Tom Marvelli's The Boy in the Bot, and if you go to Kickstarter and Indiegogo, I think you'll find it there under The Boy in the Bot Book 2, if you look for that particular. You probably still see Book 1 out there, too, as well it goes, if you want to look some more information on that. But this is going to be a great book. It's going to be so much fun. I can't wait to see it. And I do hope someday it gets to be an animated, even a movie would be a great thing. With all this.
Thank you.
Be terrific. So, Tom, keep up the wonderful stuff. And, I can't wait to see this. This is going to be so much fun to read it when it comes out. So be sure to sign up and follow what's going on with there. And so when the launch happens and stuff, you'll be properly informed. And we want to make sure that this gets a good following because we want more. So, Tom, keep it up.
Thank you very much. And again, thank you for having me. I really do appreciate it.
If you're enjoying this show, I would greatly appreciate your support. For $5 a month, you can ensure I'm able to bring you interviews with comic creators week after week. You can support this show by becoming a patron at patreon.com/majorspoilers. Check out that address, again, patreon.com/majorspoilers, for more information. Thanks in advance. That's it for this episode. Be back next time. I'll have another great interview with an excellent comics creator, something I'm sure you won't want to miss. But until then, keep reading your comics.